Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one.
So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love!
A Super Bowl champion.
The Green Bay Packers have won the Super Bowl.
The Packers' all-time leading scorer.
A game winner for Mason Crosby.
It's time for the Mason Crosby Show with Mitch Nellis on the Wisconsin Sports Radio Network. Powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook and on the free Odyssey app.
This is the Mason Crosby Show. Welcome into hour number two, or high noon in Fort Collins.
Oh, we're just staying That's in right. Colorado.
Yeah, for now.
Stayed in Fort Collins for like just under 2 years. So
you what?
I lived in Fort Collins when I was a kid.
Why?
Yeah.
Like, that's where your family lived?
My dad's job, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Just took us to Fort Collins, so.
So, was the rest of your childhood in Texas, or did you have other
places? My childhood was in Texas.
Okay.
I was away from Texas for, gosh, what was it, like, basically 2 years. We lived in Louisiana for 9 months. It was wild.
Explains a lot.
My dad's job got transferred up to Colorado to
Fort Collins. Weird
accent. And then, I was there for a couple. Yeah,
you got a little crawfish Texas too.
Yeah, I can hear. Well, that's why I don't
bayou.
Why I didn't get that Texas accent? Like the time I was kind of, I was learning to read in like third grade. So that was for you, Tommy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking out for teammate John Kuhn today. Like he's got to read twice. Like
ooh,
that's tough.
Some of those names. Too.
Some of those names. Francis Mauinoa. Oh, yeah. he's messing that up, dude.
I assume they are phonetically written out.
There was a guy who was the guard.
I did see the card last year, and like whoever was reading
Mitch.
Was like, he was behind the scenes, like, oh my gosh, like, I hope I don't mess this up because it was a tough one.
Mitch, you tell me right now, you have to read pick number 14 for the Baltimore Ravens, the guard out of Penn State, that you are totally not reading that correctly. Do you got it right there yet?
Hold on.
Any Hachor? Is it the is that the one? Or
the
is
guy had. I mean, his name is all vowels. I mean, I've never
Iowani.
Maybe our guest knows how to pronounce it.
Yes. Joining us now on the guest hotline, powered by Gruber Law, one call, that's all, from the Book of Eli and Pack-A-Day podcast and 24/7 sports and really wherever there's anything, Eli Berkovitz is there. Eli, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks again for the invite. How you doing?
Doing all right. Is that Lambo over your shoulder?
That is Lambo. That is an original Eli Berkovitz preseason game picture.
Nice.
Yeah. Very nice.
You got to
nice.
Take more photos so you can brighten that wall up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. You need one on the other side.
Yeah. I need something here. I know. I'm working on it.
Do you know how to pronounce his name, Eli? Olavega Ione? Is that what it was?
So I believe it's Olavega Ione. There's what? That silent,
like exactly
like
what I said.
That's exactly what you said.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
There's a silent N in there somewhere.
There's the silent
yeah,
N.
A lot of tough names.
So, Eli, of course, we've got tons of Packers stuff and ideas and thoughts about day two and going into day three. But quickly, before we get to the Packers, from last night, what stood out to you? What didn't, I mean, obviously, Mendoza wasn't a surprise to anybody. But anything surprise you, and anything specifically Packers that you noticed from last night?
Well, for the Packers, I do think it's nice that a lot of corners went undrafted last night.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, Jamon McCoy out of Tennessee is still there. You got to worry about the injury, but it is interesting he's there. Colton Hood, I thought, probably could have went last night. He didn't. Avion Terrell, Brandon Cisse. My favorite guy, D'Angelo Pons, even though I doubt we draft him just because of our thresholds and all that, but I do think corner and defensive tackle were relatively untouched, which I think is great for the Packers. But I mean, I think the most shocking pick has to be Ty Simpson at 13 to the Rams. Clearly, Les Snead got on the phone with the Packers front office and said, hey, we're in a Super Bowl window here. we got to draft a backup quarterback. But no, it's probably long term, probably a pretty good call for them. Yeah. I thought it was interesting that Caleb Downs fell out of the top 10. Obviously, I mean, maybe the biggest surprise to me was Reuben Bain falling to 15. I had him as my number one player on my big board. And I get it, the short arms, whatever, but it's like, he's a good football player. I don't care if his arms are an inch and a half, a little short. He is so good, and the Bucs got an absolute steal at 15.
Yeah, I don't like that the Bucs got that. That worked out for the Bucs because I always feel like, what, you know, not that the Packers play them every year anymore, but it's always a tough matchup, and that's always a team you want to look out for. Eli Berkovitz joining us here on the Mason Crosby Show. Mace, I know that you're Tommy's super excited for a cornerback. Eli just rattled off a number of those names. It seems to be that's where the focus is for round two.
Were you asking me?
I was throwing it to you.
I thought you were throwing it to Eli. It clearly feels like it's going that direction. And we've been talking about McCoy there from Tennessee and his injury situation and everything that's kind of being speculated. He did run and he did his pro day, and his numbers are off the charts. I mean, this guy is an athletic freak. But, you know, he's dropped out of the first round. He hasn't played football, meaningful football, in maybe, a year and a half or so? So if he has more injury stuff that they have to address, these teams seem a little scared. Do you find a guy like that with the tangibles he has, is it worth a team – if he falls to 52, is it worth the Packers taking and kicking the tires on a player like that, even if maybe they have to go in and do something with his knees and he's not available to start the season? Do you think it's worth it?
I do. Like someone 52, else? I do like multiple corners, but I just feel like McCoy, I had him as a top 10 player in the draft, and he only lasted because of the injury. And it's one of those things where if your team doctor says, you know what, I think we can handle this, we can make a good plan for him, then you're getting potentially the biggest steal of the draft. Because if McCoy can stay healthy, even if he was the first pick of the second round at 33, he would be a massive steal. You get him at 52, that is a highway robbery, as they would say. But I love McCoy, but I would say my top two behind him have to be Colton Hood and Brandon Cisse. I'm nervous all these corners could be gone. But because there's so many left, if it gets to that 45 range, I really hope Goody gets on the phone and does what he can to move up. Because if McCoy, Cisse, and Hood are gone, you're basically waiting till at least round three, if not four or five, and taking just some value picks and hoping you could develop them. But no one that I think you could reliably start week one in 2026. And I think any one of McCoy, Cisse, or Hood could be starters. I would say the same for Terrell. I just don't think he's going to meet our thresholds.
Mm. Interesting. So in this first round, let's just talk about that before we keep moving into what the Packers might do. Other than the Ty Simpson, like, did everything slot in? Were you surprised to see Bailey go above what was the other guy?
Arvell
Reese from Ohio State. Did you think it was going to be flip-flopped, or was that kind of a toss-up in a sense, and just kind of Jets' preference was the Bailey guy?
Yeah, I had it as a real 50-50. I had Bailey in my final mock as the Jets pick, but it wouldn't have surprised me if it was Reese. I think Reese fell because we've seen in the last, I don't know, 5 to 10 years, a lot of these middle linebacker to edge converts, they don't always go very well. And that's something that if you want to take the shot on it in the first round, okay. But second overall pick, I think you want to take a guy that you know what position he plays. You don't have to go and do a whole project with him right off the bat. So I think Bailey was the right pick. I think the real shock in the top five was Jeremiah Love and Carnell Tate, because Love is obviously a phenomenal player, but the Cardinals, I think, are at least probably 2 years away from any real competing. And to take a running back at three overall, when they just signed Tyler Allgeier, they have James Conner, they have Trey Benson, really interesting choice. But Carnell Tate to the Titans is what really surprised me. I thought Robert Saleh for sure was going to go and either take Sonny Styles or Arvell Reese or maybe even Caleb Downs, like just go get a stud defensive player to lead his defense. So to go take Carnell Tate surprised me. I think he's a great receiver, but I don't think in the average draft Carnell Tate is a top five pick. Like maybe bottom half of the top 10, but not top five.
That is fascinating that Reese was available and they went and got a wide receiver there. I was saying, I guess it's like, You got Cam Ward. You're trying to build something around him. You got to start, you know, getting him who you consider are weapons that he can use. I want to go to the NFC North and just talk about their, you know, the other teams that had first round picks in this this year's draft. How do you think they picked? Like, what do you think about the draft picks for the Bears, Lions, and the Vikings?
So starting with, I believe the Lions were first. I was pretty confident they'd take a tackle. Blake Miller makes perfect sense. He's maybe the most pro-ready tackle. Started, I think, 54 games at Clemson. So a Lions team that wants to win right now, they don't want a project. They don't want to develop anyone. Miller makes perfect sense. I don't think he has the highest ceiling, but I do think he's going to come in and be a solid tackle for them. Probably at right tackle, they'll put Penei Sewell over at left tackle. The Vikings took a real gamble on Caleb Banks. Like, if he can stay healthy and he hits his upside, he'll turn out to be one of the best players in this draft. But a guy his size, with the amount of foot injuries he's had to the same foot over and over, I think they took a real risk, and it could come back to bite them, where I think he's either going to be an absolute star, or in like 3 years from now, he just might have played like 11 total games and it just doesn't work out. But I'm most concerned and annoyed that the fact that Dylan Thienemann fell to 25 to the Bears. I thought absolute latest he goes to the Vikings at 18, which I wouldn't have liked either, but I was kind of mentally prepared for that. For the Bears to get him, a lot of people had him as a top 10 to 15 player on their big board. He is a really, really good safety, and the Bears just lost Jaquan Brisker and a couple other people in that secondary. And I do think Thienemann was, unfortunately, a very good pick for them.
I like how you said that, Eli.
Yeah, I know. That's the one I was looking at as well. Yep. I was like, I think the Bears won out of those three picks on the guy that they selected there with Thienemann.
Yeah. Eli, if the Packers don't pick a cornerback, what position are they going to pick in the second round?
I would hope defensive tackle. Still have some really good options in Christian Miller, Caden McDonald, Lee Hunter. Hunter might be the least likely because of his RAS score, but they've been a little more lenient at defensive tackle to overlook that, so I think it's possible. And then there's no one else at defensive tackle I would take at 52. If they had a trade back, there are some options there. But I think an underrated one is edge rusher. There's a lot of edge rushers that didn't get drafted last night. Zion Young, TJ Parker, Gay Backus, Derek Moore. So I think it's got to be somewhere on the defense. Could they go offensive line? Possibly. But I think the only two guys I would take are Chase Bisantis and Emmanuel Pregnon, and I don't think either of them get to 52.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, let's kind of preview then, like, as we're heading into the weekend, where do you see this draft? Like, is there going to be any – it's not as exciting without a first-round draft pick, you know, just for the whole thing, but you're building now kind of this long-term solution for this roster through this draft. Do you think he's more likely to trade up and go get a guy he wants in the second round or even later in the draft? Or do you think he might even go back in the second round if all of his guys that he like really was interested in and they couldn't get a deal done? Do you think trades back in the second round and adds draft picks in this year's draft? Because it seems like some of these back end players are pretty solid.
Yeah, I got to go probably more likely to trade back. I just think in this draft, it's so clustered together from like picks 25 to 60. It's not that much of a separation where if you're sitting at 52, again, unless like Jermon McCoy falls or maybe one of those two offensive linemen I just mentioned were to fall, I don't think there's a massive difference in the edge rusher you'll get at 52 versus the edge rusher you'll get at 57 or the corner or defensive tackle. So a trade-up would be fun. Obviously, that's more exciting of the options.
Yep.
But considering I think a lot of the like top, let's say, 5 to 6 guys I'm most interested in, I just don't think they get even to 45. I think a trade-back is probably more likely than a trade-up.
Eli, when do you think they take a quarterback to be the backup?
Ooh. Brian Brohm isn't walking through that door, Mason.
Yeah. Carson Beck might be the closest thing to Brian Brohm in this draft. So
I do think they draft one, and I could see it being after getting that Eagles pick at 153 in the Wicks trade, they have pick 153 and 160. I could see them with one of those two picks going quarterback. Guys like Taylen Green, Cole Payton, I don't think a guy like Nussmeier gets down there, but there are some high upside guys. I do hope they kind of go in the Malik Willis mold, where it's like, I'd rather you take someone with some high upside that you could run kind of that mobile offense with, like you did with Willis, because it was so successful. And if you just want to stick with a pocket passer, then just keep Desmond Ridder and let him be the backup. But if you want to take a different approach at it, yeah, Talen Green or Cole Payton are two guys that I think I would target in that fifth, sixth round range.
Nice. Oh, man, it's we're the calm before the storm as these next rounds of drafts come. I remember when I got drafted, it was still the 2 days. I think that first day maybe started around noon.
Yeah, 11 or yeah. Noon or...
And so, like, the first round starting at noon. So now we get this thing stretched out over multiple days, and we got to just kind of build it all up, waiting for everything to kind of kick off here tonight. What would Packers fans feel if all of a sudden you wait and then Goody goes and trades the second round pick to get, like, two-thirds and a fourth-round pick or some ridiculous, and now we're sitting there like not having a second-round pick. Do you think the fans lose their mind, or is everyone just okay right now? We're steady, and we're going to just get some good picks.
No, I mean, I think Packer fans are really good at losing their mind over just about anything.
isn't every fan base, an NFL fan.
You got to lose your mind a little bit.
Exactly. So I think even a trade back from 52 to like 55, half of Packers Twitter will lose their mind because so-and-so went at 52. But it wouldn't be – like there are some teams. I think the Jaguars have multiple third-round picks. The Steelers have multiple third-round picks. It wouldn't be my favorite option. But if you could end up picking three times in the third round and maybe another fifth-round pick, like you have three third-rounders and three fifth-rounders – in this kind of draft, it is an interesting thought because a lot of those guys are very similar to me and I think a lot of other people where, again, it wouldn't be my first choice. But if they got a crazy haul that you just couldn't turn down. Also, I think Goody, if he did that, he would then trade back up like into like the 60 range. Like he would get two third rounders, trade one of them and a sixth rounder to go back into the second. We've seen him do that, when they traded out for Jair. They did that with Jaden Reed. They traded back and traded up and traded back. So I think there could be some movement. Last night, there was like seven trades in the final 10 minutes of the night.
Yeah, it did seem like there were a lot of trades.
What about wide receiver, Eli? How early can they do that?
I was going to say the real dark horse at 52 would be receiver. I wouldn't love it because it's like I have a lot of faith in Watson, Reed, and Golden, and I also do like Savion Williams a lot. But there are guys there that are very Packers-y that might fall. Jeremy Bernard, Bryce Lance, Ted Hurst. Elijah Surratt. I don't think Denzel Boston gets there, but that's a possibility. If they don't go at 52, which again, I don't think they will, unless it's just like defense is totally pick clean, offensive line is pick clean, and what are you going to do? But I do think they have to draft a receiver at some point, but I'm hoping it's more day three, early to mid day three. Take like a big X receiver, outside guy, deep threat, kind of high upside kind of player.
I like it. I kind of want to go to the current team for a moment because it all ties together with this draft.
Sure.
Who on this roster, kind of year two, year three, some of these young guys, do you see or do you think needs to have like a lot of improvement or they're going to probably be replaced by somebody in this draft? Like who are those guys you're looking for and you've been kind of tagged? All right, this guy needs to improve, or I'm looking for upside with him. Do you have any of those types of players on this roster right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think Anthony Belton needs to come out and show something this year. He was a second-round pick, and I think, to be honest, in most people's opinions, he was probably more like a third-round pick. I didn't hate it, but I do want to see more. And not that he had a bad rookie season, but right now he's slated to be the starting right guard, and we got to see what that looks like. I also think at the edge rush position, right, behind Micah Parsons, who's currently injured, obviously you have Van Ness, who knows what they're going to do with the fifth-year option, I should say. I think they have like a week to make a decision. But Baron Sorrell and Colin Oliver, it's going to show a lot of what the front office thinks of those two guys, depending on how tonight goes. Like, if they don't draft an edge rusher tonight, they're basically saying, Sorrell, Oliver, we trust you to go out there this year without Micah Parsons in the beginning of the year, with Lucas Van Ness kind of being up in the air as to what he's going to be as a player. And they're saying, we trust you to be our edge rushers 3 and 4, maybe even 2 and 3. But if they draft an edge rusher tonight, all of a sudden you do have to wonder, maybe they didn't love what they saw. I mean, we really saw Oliver and we really barely saw Sorrell, I'm a big fan of both of them, but I think it's risky to just go into next year with Micah Parsons coming off an injury and basically asking Lucas Van Ness, Colin Oliver, Baron Sorrell, and Brenton Cox to like be your pass rush. That's a bit scary.
That doesn't sound like a whole lot of pressure to me.
Do you think if they draft an edge rusher in this with the second round pick, like Van Ness is not getting his fifth year option? Is that kind of your gut?
I would lean that way. I still think it's like 50-50 that he gets it. He probably does, only because the edge rusher market has exploded so much where it's like, all right, it's worth paying him. I think it's somewhere in like the $15 million range just to see. Because truth is, before he got hurt last year, he was finally showing a little more. And I really do hope that he can continue to do that this year. So I don't think it's like, that's it, Van Ness is done, it's over. But if they draft a guy at 52, whether it's Zion Young, Gabe Backus, TJ Parker, whatever, you got to think that's a bit of an indictment on their long-term plans with Van Ness.
Well, again, we have not heard from Jonathan Gannon, so we actually just are speculating what kind of defense they're going to run. He's never going to talk.
LVN could play cornerback still on the bus.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, still maybe they're moving him to a stand-up linebacker, but... But that was kind of, I talked about this, like whenever I was there in Green Bay, we ran a 4-3. You have Aaron Kampman and you have like traditional defensive ends, right? And that's like, that's what Kampman was. And then Dom Capers came and put it to a 3-4, and you know, you had your outside linebackers flowing in, and Kampman tried to move inside, but just wasn't as effective. And then he goes down to Jacksonville. So, do you see Van Ness as that type of guy? Like if they kind of go to more of a 3-4, does he fit in as a more outside linebacker type guy, or does he need to have his hand in the dirt and be like a true defensive end, or is he big enough to move down into a tackle spot and play like a 3 technique?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think if we're mostly lining up in the 3-4, I think you have to consider putting him as a 3-tech, because I don't really think he's a 3-4 outside linebacker. He's more traditional hand in the dirt kind of guy, and he does have the size to do it. I mean, I'm sure they asked him to slim down a bit for Halfley's defense, but if they're going to go 3-4 here, have him put on another 5 to 10 pounds, and you could, you know, put him on the inside, especially with Wyatt coming back from injury and the defensive tackle position being pretty weak in general. I don't think Van Ness has like that burst to get off the twitch to be like a super effective outside linebacker in a 3-4.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I totally agree with you. That's kind of where I've been seeing it. But again, wouldn't it be nice if we just like had some more information from the guy that's going to be running the show there on the defensive side of the ball on exactly what type of players might be needed to run the defense that he's going to put.
I heard he's been sick. He's got fire in his gut.
Yeah, so, he's still on the bus ride. He's still on the bus ride.
Flat tires on the way up.
Do you think that Jonathan Gannon is so happy that he took this job with the Packers, where like nobody's expected ever to talk to the media or the people, that he can like just lean into never talking, as opposed to maybe some other organizations where it's like they want you to talk?
They draft a corner and an edge tonight. We got to hear from Jonathan Gannon, right?
Have to. I don't know how every team operates, but I can't imagine many teams hire a coordinator, offensive or defensive coordinator, and what has it been? It's been like 3 months, and we haven't heard a word from the guy. It's very strange, and I don't know. It's the longer you go, you just make it weirder for the fans. Like, it seems like you're almost hiding something, like you don't want him to talk, where it's like, we know he's a little bit, you know, he's had his moments in front of cameras or whatever. I don't care. You don't have to be a showman. As long as you're a good defensive coordinator, I don't care. But I want to hear what kind of defense you want to run. I want to hear how you plan on using some of these players, Edra Cooper, Micah Parsons, you know, Javon Hargrave, you just signed. So it's strange, but I agree. If they go defense tonight and we don't hear from Gannon, I don't know. The guy might just not exist. Who knows?
He's AI. But it is. It's the Packer way.
He's AI.
Keep everything close to your vest. You know, hold those cards tight, you know, because if Gannon gets out there and he's throwing out, all right, I'm looking to, you know, do this with these players, all that, like, you do lose a little bit of a competitive advantage of having a new defensive coordinator and a coach coming in and, like, a guy that has been willing to adjust his defense schematically for the types of players he has. So that's being in that building for so long, that's why they're doing it. It's not anything to do with Gannon. It's more like, until he has to speak, like the NFL requires him to, like, why would we have him give out any information of what we're doing? That's just a Packer way through and through.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Halfley spoke not too long after he was hired, but yeah, the Packers love to keep things under their belt, which I like, but it is annoying. Like, you see all these teams, you know, releasing like fun draft room content and their phone calls with the players and behind the scenes stuff, which I get maybe some teams are nervous about giving things away, but I always found that content to be very interesting. So I wish we would do it a bit more, but I also understand why you wouldn't, because you don't want to give anything away.
Well, I'll tell you this one. One time whenever I got a new contract, they met me in like the players' lounge, handed me the contract, and I signed it and walked off. And like, that was it. That was the fanfare that got for a new contract extension there in Green Bay. But that's everybody. I mean, that's across the board. I mean, obviously Matt LaFleur signs it under, you know, in the dark, and Aaron Rodgers, it's always just kind of like,
well, Aaron Rodgers is always,
he's always in
there.
This stuff just
he's
happens.
In his teepee.
It just happens.
I love to think that they were like, we got media availability for Mason Crosby after the contract, and it's just your daughters waiting to like ask you questions.
They were all over.
That would be great. Yes.
They were running around playing video games and like playing games while I was signing it. But yeah, you see this. Like, I've seen it like all over. I mean, it's like they put them in a room and they do all the stuff, and the Packers are just like, nope. We're just gonna announce it after everyone else has talked about it, and then we'll kind of put something out on a Friday afternoon, like, oh, contract extension, here it is.
Yeah.
All right, Eli. Yeah. Final thing, your prediction. What happens at 52 today?
Whatever you say, I'm putting it on Kelsey right now.
I'm gonna stick with corner, and I'm gonna say that Brandon Cisse, whether it's maybe they need to have a small trade up, whether it's at 52 or in the high 40s, they get Brandon Cisse and bring him into that corner room, because Goody in his pre-draft presser, like very un-Goody like, very clearly was like, we need to add numbers at cornerback. He said it multiple times, which is not something he does. And I just don't think they want to risk waiting to the third round and the fourth round. So I think they're going to do whatever they have to do to get one at 52. And between the names I've mentioned earlier, I think Cisse is the most likely to get there, and he's a good fit. So I'm going to go Brandon Cisse.
All right.
We'll be Eli Berkovitz, the book of Eli, 24/7 Sports, Pack a Day Podcast, all the places you follow the Green Bay Packers. Eli Berkovitz is a part of it. Eli, thank you so much for being a part of this.
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air. And we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Show today, and we will definitely catch up with you soon.
Thanks for having me, guys. Always love coming on.
Absolutely. Right. Eli Berkovitz joining us on the guest hotline, powered by Gruber Law. One call, that's all. We'll talk a little Brewers when we come back. Great pitching matchup tonight, Brandon Woodruff and Paul Skeens. Oh, yeah. And Tommy now encountering something that I encountered because we are Kona Bros. I'm excited.
I'm not going to lie.
You knew.
I did not know Mitch drove a Kona, and it might have been like, okay, maybe I won't, because we have the same car now driving in.
Different colors. And it's to be honest, it's more Mrs. Thunder's car. Like, I drive the Toyota RAV4 Kona more Bros, often, but we are Kona Bros.
But Kona Bros was
we're
a good
get
nickname.
Some shirts.
Yeah. Not to be confused with Roman Reigns and CM Punk, who are Z-Bros and then decided to hate each other. So, if you are...
I wasn't going there. I didn't think that, no. I didn't put those two together.
How did you guys not figure out Zootopia 2? Come on. This is the Mason Crosby Show.
Nice.
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.